Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this week's edition of IHWE Professional Wrestling Radio. Since our episode last week, we have lost two major stars, both in wrestling and in the entertainment industry. Shortly after our show went off the air last week, we found out that the ninth wonder of the world, WWE superstar China, had passed. And then the next morning, we woke up to find out that none other than Prince himself had passed away at Paisley Park Studios. Ladies and gentlemen, we celebrate wrestling here, but we also celebrate the legends, the entertainment. Prince was definitely one of those. So if you'll please just give me a moment, we're going to open this show the best way I could think of tonight. So ladies and gentlemen, this is Prince.
Do you love it? We've got to be the day to get to this called life. Unless it's word, life can make forever. That's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else beyond the world. A world that never be happy. You can always see the sun, day or night.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, as I said, the best way I could think of to open tonight's edition of IHWE Professional Wrestling Radio. I am your host, Michael McCurdy, the creator and author of the upcoming encyclopedia WCCW, and joining me, as always, my co-host, nestled safely behind the walls of Camp Sousa in an undisclosed location, somewhere behind the Redwood Curtain, John McNamara, the bootleg JR from Offshoots Network himself, asked me where the location was, and I refused to give it. Because it's that important. My co-host, Joe Sousa. Joe, how are we doing tonight?
Doing well. Don't feel too bad there. There's been a few people. Joe, where are you at? I'm here. Well, where's here? Here I am. And that's
there
pretty
you
much
go.
It. Doing okay. Pretty rough and tumble one, you know, losing China and then Prince. personally, you know, I got to see China in person at a WWF house show many, many years ago. And the main event was, at that time, it was known as the San Jose Arena, the Shark Tank. And Triple H wrestled Stone Cold Steve Austin for the title. Austin was the champion. And it was a house show. So, you know, basically at a house show, anything can happen. Especially when China takes a swing at Austin and all of a sudden she becomes topless. Her top literally disintegrated, went bing, gumbai, and she kind of covered up and walked around the ring to the back to the dressing room and the booth and the cat calls and the woo and all that type of thing. So, but that's my China story. Prince, you know, huge fan of Prince. I didn't get turned on to Prince until 1979. The first song I ever heard from him was one of his hits off of the album Dirty Mind called Head. And that was the big hit down in San Jose, where I was living at the time. I was a freshman in high school. Now, flash forward to 1981. I got to see Prince twice, in 81 and in 82, for the Controversy in 1999 tour pre-Purple Rain. Now, with the Controversy Tour. This was at the back then San Francisco. Now it's the Bill Graham Civic Auditorium. And it was Prince, and the time opened for him. And very, very small building. To kind of give you an idea, Mike, it's about the size of the Eureka Municipal Auditorium, a very small venue. So I'm sitting upstairs, and I see this guy wearing a Prince bandana over his head, kind of bopping around the floor, dancing and walking around, that type of thing. And I kind of noticed he had some heels. And so I figured, just for giggles, I'm going to walk down there. And so I went downstairs, and he was slowly walking off to the side of the building there, where there was a door, and I kind of walked over. True story, before anyone goes, oh, this must be one of those rants. Nope, true story. As he was proceeding to open the door to step out, he took off the bandana, and it was Prince. And I was probably a couple of feet away from him, and he turned and looks at me, and I look at him, and he puts his finger up like, you know, shh, like I didn't know, and I kind of nodded. And so I thought, well, just for giggles, I kind of took a couple of steps towards him. I turned around and stuck out my hand, and I kid you not, he slapped my hand. And I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. So I, you know, go upstairs, and a couple of my buddies were up there, and they decided to rib me. He's like, why didn't you tell us? Well, you know, you didn't ask, and it was just a hunch. Worst case scenario, I could have made a complete fool out of myself, but... But anyway, multi-talented performer. Now, up until the Purple Rain album, soundtrack, whatever you want to call it, he played every instrument on his albums, the first five albums. When he toured, you know, he had a band with him. But it wasn't until from Purple Rain on, then he had, you know, the Revolution, and then he actually acknowledged other people in the studio. Musical genius, such an icon, very, very tragic. Thoughts go to, you know, family, friends, and fans, as well as China. I mean, you know, her life was rough and tumble, but like I said, I mean, wrestling-wise, she was a trailblazer. I mean, all the stuff that she's done. My favorite China storyline was the Mamacita thing with her and Eddie Guerrero, another departed a friend that we lost many years ago, but their storyline I thought was white hot. Very, very cool. Mike?
Yes, we are experiencing a little bit of technical difficulty. My headphones shut off for a second, so give me just a minute and I'm going to get back on board here. I hope. Hold
okay,
on just
well,
a minute,
why...
folks. I
okay,
love
well,
technical errors, Joe, I tell you.
Okay, while you're working with your technical error, okay, I see a punchline with that one. Brian, do you have a China or a Prince story you'd like to share?
Oh, let's see. Well, at least as far as Prince goes, I liked a number of his songs. Little Red Corvette, Raspberry Beret, 1999, of course. And, of course, I loved Bat Dance and the Batman album. Then this would be the movie that came out in 1989 with Jack Nicholson playing the Joker, Michael Keaton being Batman. So, yeah, love that. Oh, yeah, we also want to mention we lost Ruth Silverstone, too, that same
yes.
day. So that was
yes.
just real sad. And we were told at the reunion that she had taken a bad fall and she'd been placed in a medically induced coma. So I was kind of wondering if this was going to be it. And, well, sure enough, unfortunately. So, but, yeah. And I believe that was her first marriage. This was Dean's second marriage. And this is according to his autobiography, which I got and read last year. So, yeah, lovely woman that we all got, and we'll all miss her very much. She worked a lot behind the scenes.
Yes, she did.
So she was a long-time CAC member. China, sadly, never got to meet her or see her wrestle in person. But, yeah, I love the Eddie Guerrero storyline she did, along with Chris Jericho, too.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, she was definitely a trailblazer for sure. Definitely, and taking on the men, taking on the guys. So trained
right.
by Kelly Kowalski, December 27th, 1969, born in Rochester, New York. moved to Florida, so got her college education there, got trained by Killer Kowalski. So it made her debut about 1995, but got signed up by the World Wrestling Federation about 1996. So, and of course, she was dating Triple H at that time. So yeah, she had a bit of stroke with the office, so to speak. Unfortunately, by the time, you know, Triple H broke it up and Triple H moved on to Stephanie, and well, by 2001, the company didn't really want much to do with her, so the last 15 years was really a challenge for her with various jobs and, of course, posing for Playboy, being in pornographic movies, and just dealing with drug abuse and all sorts of other issues. But it seemed like, at least right about the time of her death, it seemed like she was starting to get really comfortable in her own skin and things were finally starting to turn around for her. So, yeah, it's a huge loss. So, yeah, it was a real sad week last week. So I'm hoping this week's a lot better.
Yeah, very true. And it's kind of funny you mentioned about, you know, China and stroke. Well, I guess who has a stroke now, you know, with Triple H, you know, marrying into the family. But speaking mm-hmm. about Prince really fast, not too sure if you all know this, Prince was a wrestling fan. You know, read a couple of his biographies, did some checking up, you know, many years ago. And it kind of made sense because, you know, he is from Minneapolis. And at that time, you know, that was a hotbed, you know.
AWA.
Which, incidentally, today, 1 year ago, you know, we lost
Bern Gagne. Yeah.
So there's a connection right there. And very, very sad. I mean, Vern was not doing well health-wise at the time, but still nonetheless, you can prepare for death up to a point, but when it actually happens, you know, you just can't prepare for it. You know, you can. It may not be as devastating as it originally could be, but there is a mourning, there is a breakdown process. That's just, you know, from my experience and, you know, seeing other folk. But I can see Mr. Prince Rogers Nelson booing Nick Bockwinkel and cheering Vern Gagne to regain that title from the dreaded, arrogant, egotistical Nicholas Bockwinkel with Bobby Heenan in his corner. I can picture that.
Well, you know,
yeah,
I definitely can
as well, for sure.
I am back with you, Joe. I have my headset fixed. I unfortunately don't have a Prince or a China story, really. I was just a fan. I mean, you know me. I'm the age group where, you know, Purple Rain was my introduction to Prince. I found Controversy, Dirty Mind, and all that after the fact. But
yeah,
to this day, Darling Nikki is still my favorite song, and we can't play that on the air. That's just not.
Why not?
That's just not appropriate.
Okay, hold on. We're on the air, and you're making reference to Darling Nikki's Not Appropriate, and we're on the air talking?
Anyway, Darling Nikki's always been one of my favorites or whatever. So,
right.
But, yeah, Thursday morning to get the news that Prince had passed kind of brought back a few years ago back when I got home one day, turned on TV, and found out that Michael Jackson had passed. You know, these are icons of the 80s, so it was kind of very shocking, very sad, you know. I listened to some Prince that morning. You know, I've listened to it a lot in the last, like, week, so. And as far as China goes, well, you know, when she debuted in the WWE as the bodyguard for Triple H and then a member of the original formation of D-Generation X, you know, that was kind of my exposure to China, plus all her work with, you know, Eddie Guerrero, which they actually spotlighted. They actually showed some of that during the tribute that WWE did for her. They actually did a tribute video for her. So I know a lot of people were kind of wondering, you know, whether or not they were going to. Because unfortunately, China has been, you know, on shaky ground with, you know, the WWE, not due to what happened during her tenure there, but just kind of some of her, you know, decisions she made later on in years. And unfortunately, you know, yes, she got involved in drugs. She was on Celebrity Rehab. I'm sure some of us remember that. And the film career, if you can call it that she had, you know, these are kind of some black marks. But honestly,
I think China should be recognized by the WWE in some way, shape, or form somewhere down the road. Because while she wasn't she was not your typical diva, she definitely was a trailblazer for, you know, her time. If it wasn't for China, you probably wouldn't have had someone like Beth Phoenix come along. You may not have had someone like, you know, Karma or Awesome Kong come along that could go one-on-one with the guys. I think China kind of set the path for women like them, so she definitely deserves her spot.
Well, being that said, let's put the question out there with us three. Doesn't have to be necessarily next year, but down the road, China in the WWE Hall of Fame, yay or nay? I say yes, based on, you know, the impact that she had on the business at that time. Guys, your opinion?
I agree with you, based on her impact, yes.
Okay, so Titan Towers, Stamford, Connecticut, Greenwich, Connecticut, Vince, Triple H, somebody, okay, you heard it from us, put her in.
There you go. And while you're at it, just for Joe and everybody else out there, put Ray Stevens in too, because y'all know you dropped the ball on that one a couple years ago.
Yeah, but for that to happen, we're going to have to flash back, because that magical moment won't happen, because WrestleMania, Bay Area, that type of thing, it won't be. I mean, it'll be nice, poetic justice, if you will, but it won't have the same feel. I mean, it was just lame.
Well, I'm going to keep my opinions to myself on that one. But in other wrestling news, ladies and gentlemen, before I forget to mention this one, speaking of WrestleMania, right before WrestleMania in Dallas, Texas, there was the NWA Parade of Champions at the Ridgely Theater in Fort Worth, Texas. I was there. Amazing show. Well, now, on Fight TV, next Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern, Parade of Champions goes live on demand, $9.99. You can see all the action from the NWA Parade of Champions on your smartphone or whatever smart device that you download the Fight TV app onto. Only $9.99, video on demand, all 8 matches of the Parade of Champions, all NWA titles defended. You can see it right there, $9.99, as I said, goes live next Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern. So an hour before we go on the air, or we begin to record our show, you can order the NWA Parade of Champions. So if you're not listening to our show that night, that's fine, as long as you're watching the Parade of Champions. Did I say $9.99?
We've been through this before there, Michael.
That was the WWE Network. That was a couple years ago, and I'm not going that route. But
okay,
I do have to
now,
because David told me to. And, of course, we'll also be releasing on traditional DVD and Blu-ray. Also, we'll have information on that in the coming weeks. I do know the Jim Cornette Experience will be the two-hour Jim Cornette Experience, hosted by none other than Cousin Willie himself, Mr. Bill After, will be an extra on the Blu-ray release. So if anybody wants to see the Jim Cornette Experience, go out and order the Blu-ray. We'll have more information on that here in the next couple weeks.
Well, the Watch Parade of Champions, that's a pretty good deal, especially you get to watch the show in its entirety of all the matches, all the championship matches. Lots of good stuff.
And then, of course, it was just announced earlier this afternoon by ICW founder David Fuller that starting with Operation Atomic Drop on May 30th, IHWE live events will be available on demand through Fight TV. We do have a deal going with Fight TV now. So IHWE is actually going more global. Anywhere you can download the Fight TV app, you'll be able to watch IHWE professional wrestling, starting with Operation Atomic Drop on May 30th, followed by IHWE Triple Crown, and, of course, IHWE Old School Hustle, which will be in July of this year. So very excited about the deal with Fight TV. There's a lot of great action available on Fight TV. If anybody hasn't gone out there, Ring of Honor, Shimmer, Evolve, they're all on there. You want to find some indie wrestling? Everybody is on Fight TV for free. This is free action. You can get NWA Smoky Mountain. You can get Paragon Pro Wrestling. You can get West Coast Wrestling Connection. You can get NWA Mid-South. so many applicants are available through Fight TV, as well as mixed martial arts, MMA events. Jim Ross, equity partner in Fight TV, he actually took a chance and spoke with us at CAC. You can actually find that video on YouTube now, where he talked about CAC as well as the Parade of Champions coming up on Fight TV. So if you don't have Fight TV downloaded, go ahead, go find it, Google Play or the Apple Store, download it, and then you can have amazing MMA, wrestling, and boxing action right there in the palm of your hand on your phone or other smart device.
Also,
y'all downloading now? You're all downloading now?
yeah, we are.
Real quick here, for history, 35 years ago today, Tommy Rich defeated Harley Race to win the NWA World Heavyweight Championship in Augusta, Georgia. And that was a big deal back then. And, of course, it was one of those short title reigns. But, yeah, it was a big deal. 24 years ago today, Barry Windham beat Stunning Steve Austin to win the WCW World Television Championship. This was April 27th, 1992, in Atlanta, Georgia, when they were doing their television taping at Center Stage Theater. And 29 years ago today, and even Lance Russell liked it when I posted it on his Facebook page, Austin Idol beat Jerry the King Lawler to win the Southern Heavyweight Championship inside a steel cage at the Mid-South Coliseum. This was April 27th, 1987, so of course Memphis, Tennessee. As a result of a pre-match stipulation, Lawler received a buzz cut. Yes, and got some of his hair shaved off.
That's right.
This was a big, big deal. This was a steel cage match. Paul E. Dage, who was late Paul Heyman, was managing, and Tommy Rich was there, and this turned into a full-blown riot. It was such a big, big deal with the stipulation and everything that was involved. And Lawler, yeah, instead of getting his head completely shaved, yes, it's got a little bit of a buzz cut, but still, that was a really big deal back then.
Very nice, very nice. Also, real quick, huge congratulations to Samoa Joe, brand spanking new NXT champion.
Yes.
Yes, and for anyone who wants to see the match where he won that title, that is available on demand on the WWE Network on this week's edition of WWE NXT. So they were advertising that during Monday Night Raw. But, you know, I'm going to go out and take a look. It's very rare. It's kind of surprising that there was a title change on a house show. It's very rare that ever happens.
Yeah, looking forward to on the 14th of next month, I will be going up. Thanks to my little brother. He scored some tickets. Him, his daughter, my niece, Arlene, and myself are going to be going up to Portland to go to an NXT house show. So that's going to be exciting. That'll be a lot of fun. Watching NXT. They worked their butts off. I mean, it's wrestling. Hal Raymond, my brother, how he pulled it off is beyond me. But scored fourth row seats to the ring, so it was like, whoo! So at least for one evening, I get to actually sit and play fans. So it's going to be nice to sit there and hoot and holler and all that. So I might even have some popcorn, maybe. So I don't know.
Are you going to pop it too?
I might.
There you go, because you know what? That's the one job I don't think Joe's ever done is pop popcorn.
Well, if I can pop some popcorn sitting down at an NXT show. That'll be an exclusive.
That'd be talent.
Yes, indeed.
Also want to let everyone know, this was just announced yesterday. It's going to be available May 4th through Amazon. Jeannie Clark's book. And it is called
cool.
Through the Shattered Glass by Jeannie Clark. It's going to be available on Amazon starting May 4th. You can order there. You can also order it from her personal website. She will sign it for you, personally autograph it for you, and then she will send that to you. Five-page forward from Kevin Von Erich. Also has, let's see here, look at that. Introduction by Missy Hyatt, forward by Kevin Von Erich, 243 pages. This uncompromising autobiography exposes the dark nature of the substance abuse culture which gripped the entertainment industry, examining the consequences to a broken family that it created. This is a detailed account of her highs and lows during a lifetime in the wrestling business and the ultimate cost it had on those around her. This is a story of personal survival that remained unknown until now. And as I said, that is available on Amazon on May 4th. Or you can ask for a signed copy by going and emailing her at throughtheshatteredglass@hotmail.com. She'll personally autograph the books and send it to you on May 6th.
Wow.
Jeannie was a guest on our show just a few months back, so she was talking about the book. I'm hoping to get her on here again. Unfortunately, due to the time differences, right now it's about 2 o'clock in the morning over there. So for her to do an episode of ISWE Radio, we have to do a special early morning edition around 10 a.m., which is 6 p.m. her time. So we'll see if we can work out the logistics. Maybe Brian and I and Joe can sit down with her on a weekend early in the morning or something like that. We'll be able to talk with her about Through the Shattered Glass and have her on as a guest again soon. So, but I'm sure, Brian, you, like me, will be buying that book next week when it comes out. So, because I'm definitely interested in Jeannie's story. So
I want to get it through her. So I have to order it through her by sending her an email to get it personally autographed?
Yes, throughtheshatteredglass@hotmail.com. I will tell you, I did get an email. It's $24.99 for the book, and I believe shipping from the UK is like $18. So it's a little pricey going through there, but
still
personally autographed by Jeannie Clark, and you can actually request what you would like her to say in the book. So,
how do you spell through?
T-H-R-O-U-G-H.
T-H, okay. And sometimes it's all to spell T-H-R-U. We've seen that, so.
That's going to be one heck of a read. I mean, story.
Yeah. Yes, I want book.
I I want book. Well,
there
there's a whole lot of books coming out. You know, just picked up Pepper Martin's, you know, a couple of weeks back. Starting to read it. You know, that's going to be a pretty exciting one. Looking forward to finishing reading that one. It might take me a little bit of time. Also, Jeannie Clark's and especially Mr. Pat Patterson. Definitely want to get his book and, you know, read his. I mean, I'm very familiar with his career in San Francisco. And, before then, I knew, he was a star up in the Northwest. But, I was way too young back then. I'm going to be 53 in August. So, but it'll be really good to read that. And also his take on things when he went to New York. Speaking of Pat, I just found a couple of weeks ago on YouTube his Madison Square Garden debut from 1977. He wasn't a heel or a bad guy. He wasn't when he started in San Francisco. I take that back, in New York. He came in as a good guy. And his MSG debut was against Baron Mikhail Cicluna. And very, very good. Very, very good match. Very cool match, especially when you have Vince McMahon Jr. Calling the action. I mean, say what you will about Mr. McMahon now, but back in the 70s up until maybe 82, 83, he was, I would rank him right up there as one of the top play-by-play guys. He was that good.
Yes, and Pat's book will be coming out in August through ECW Press, the same where you can order Bill Apter's book, Is Wrestling Fixed? I Didn't Know It Was Broken. Also, if you were not listening to last week's show, shame on you, but you can find Pepper Martin's book, Shrapnel of the Soul and Redemption. You can buy that on Amazon.com. It is available through there. Also, I purchased this at Call for Rally Club, Jumpin' Jim Brunzel, one half of the High Flyers, one half of the Killer Bees, depending on which time frame you remember him from. He released a book. It's called Matlands. I had the chance to sit there and read through that. It's a quick read. It's some fun stories. As he said, the names are changed to protect the guilty. So, but there's amazing photos in here, color photos. And
protect the guilty.
Yep, I'm still reading a book about the history of the U.S. Heavyweight Championship. So that's been an interesting read. I think our guest will be calling in here pretty quick.
Our guest is actually on the line right now, Brian, so if you'd like to go ahead and make that introduction, we will get this interview started.
Hello, Jeff.
Brian. Hold on a second.
Yeah.
There we go.
Okay,
we are live on the air now.
Hello, Jeff.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
So it's good to talk to you in the flesh once again.
Yes.
But yes, ladies and gentlemen, we are talking with this man was voted NWA Referee of the Year 4 years straight from 2003 to 2006. A little bit about his background. Watched WWF during the 1970s. So he was in the favorite personalities, the late Grand Wizard, Tony Garea, Polish Power, Ivan Putski, and continued to watch wrestling, becoming interested in the NWA when he started running Baltimore and Philadelphia. Attended the first live show in 1985, WWF. Got involved with Joe Goodhart's Square Circle Fan Club in 1988 and attending some of the legends, including with Jim Cornette, the Midnight Express, Baby Doll, Steiner's and Sting, and started as Steve Williams, Great Muta, Gary Hart. Also kind of helped out in promoting, so we'll let him talk about that. Began his referee career in 1993 and then refed for NWA Virginia. So needless to say, this man has done a lot. Jeffrey T. Topo, welcome to IHWE Radio.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be on.
So, yeah, we're very interested. So how exactly did you become a pro wrestling fan? What turned you on about it?
When I was growing up in the Baltimore area in the late 60s and through the 70s, we would watch television, and then I always knew on Saturdays I could watch, it was Channel 20 out of Washington, D.C., and it carried, actually it would carry roller derby, which I was also interested in at the time, and then right afterwards it would have what the time was WWF wrestling. Would come on right afterwards. Obviously, the McMahon family based Capital Sports Promotions out of D.C., so we were able to watch that here on the TV. We didn't, there wasn't really cable or anything at that time. It was regular broadcast television.
Right. That's right. The triangle, as the late Nick Bockwinkel referred to it, yes, D.C., Baltimore, Philadelphia, of course, Mecca with New York City with Madison Square Garden with their exclusive contract.
Yes.
So, when did you start getting interested in the NWA?
About in the early 80s, Crockett Promotions started making runs into Baltimore and Philadelphia to basically challenge the WWF, who obviously
right.
were starting to become a national promotion. They had broken away from the NWA, so it was the Crocketts and Gary Juster here in Baltimore started running the what's now the Royal Farms Arena. It was the Baltimore Civic Center then, and up in Philadelphia as well. So kind of trying to make inroads basically into what was the WWF's home base at that point, trying to compete with them on a larger level. So they started running those shows and started broadcasting on TV here. And I was really surprised about the difference in the style of the NWA versus the style of the WWF at the time, whereas the NWA was the what a lot of people call the Southern style of wrestling. And I was attracted to it because it seemed to be a little more wrestling and a little less of the showmanship and a little less of the interviews that WWF had.
Right. So yeah, I attended my first live show was 1989, but yours was 1985. So what was that like for you?
Well, that was really interesting. At the time, we were actually living in southern Pennsylvania, but close enough to drive down. And my father actually worked for the Baltimore Sun Papers, which is the major newspaper here in town. And he knew that I was a wrestling fan, and we had watched it together on TV a couple times. And he had had an opportunity, actually. He had talked to one of the sports writers because at the time, the WWF would normally just give out press tickets to whatever media outlets were available in the town they were running. And a friend of his said, oh, I've got these tickets for the WWF show. I'm not going to use them. Would you want to go? And he said, oh, sure. My son's a big fan, and we'll go down and watch it. And we had some really fantastic seats. We weren't exactly ringside, but we were right at the time when the way the Baltimore Civic Center was configured, the wrestlers would actually come in. There wasn't the main ramp like they have now going down into the mm-hmm. ring area. It was they would come along the side aisles, which were like a diagonal going back towards the corner of the building. So we were actually I was actually sitting right at the railing right there at the aisleway as the wrestlers would come back and forth, you know, to the ring area. And I remember distinctly because the main event of the evening was Jimmy Superfly Snuka and the Tonga Kid versus Rowdy Roddy Piper and Cowboy Bob Orton in a Texas Tornado match.
Oh, wow. But that was a wild one.
Yeah, that was a great match. And, you know, as, you know, they walked back in the ring, I was actually able to reach out and, like, you know, touch Jimmy Snuka on the shoulder as they walked by. You know, so that was a big thrill for me at the time, you know, to be able to do that. That was my first, like I said, my first live card, my first real exposure to that, not, you know, other not just seeing it on television.
How did you get involved with Joel Goodhart? Now, Joel Goodhart, of course, now he was involved in Philadelphia, for those who don't know, and was... Like I said, we had the TWA, Tri-State Wrestling Alliance, I want to say,
mm-hmm.
which was kind of a precursor to ECW.
Right.
ECW Wrestling back then, which became Extreme.
Right.
So anyway,
and
how did you become involved?
Well, at the time, this was even before Joel had started Tri-State. Joel was running a radio show on WIP in Philadelphia, which was you know, a very large AM station, still is. It's an all-sports station. And Joel was running a wrestling show on that. And out of that, he started what he called the Square of Circle Fan Club, which was basically you could join up. And what he did was he had a working relationship with the NWA, and they would send wrestlers, and they would have these luncheons, and you could pay a fee and go to a luncheon and basically just have lunch with the wrestlers and get autographs and have photos taken and all that. Well, around that, Joel had been doing that in Philadelphia for some time, and then he decided to start doing those in Baltimore. So I was actually going to taking classes at what was then Catonsville Community College here in the Baltimore County area, and I happened to see a flyer on the wall and said, "Do you want to meet NWA wrestlers?" And it had a number on it, and I called and I talked to two gentlemen, one of them Dan Schnitzer and the other one Tony Feller, who were actually coordinating the Baltimore area for Joel. And, you know, he said, "Oh, yeah, we've got our first one, our debut luncheon is coming up with Jim Cornette and the Midnight Express." And I said, "Oh, you know, this is great." And this was just right at the time when the Midnights had just won the NWA World Tag Team titles as well as being the U.S. Tag Team champions.
About September 10th, 1988.
Right, around that time. And, you know, they were in town and because, like I said, again, they were running Baltimore and Philadelphia pretty heavily to compete with WWF. And so we met at the what was then the Baltimore Original Sports Bar, which they also had a Philadelphia version of that, too, at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to meet and greet, you know, the Midnight Express and had my photo taken with them. We had a question and answer session and all that. And another thing that happened at that, which would greatly influence me along the way, is I asked Joel about independent wrestling. I had been hearing about it, but again, hadn't really seen anything locally about it. And he said, "Oh, let me introduce you to someone." And he introduced me to a gentleman by the name of Ed Zahn. Now, Ed had been running independent shows in southern Pennsylvania and northern Maryland. Originally, he ran under the Mason-Dixon Wrestling Alliance, and then he started running Atlantic Wrestling Federation. So I met with Ed, and we hit it off immediately, and he said, "Oh, I'm running a show up in York, Pennsylvania next weekend. Why don't you come on up to the show?" And I said, "Oh, you know, great." I was familiar with where it was and everything, so I went to the Atlantic Wrestling Federation show, which was, my first independent wrestling show. And I was really blown away because, again, it wasn't anything – like I had ever seen, because again, this was, you know, it was a smaller independent promotion, so it was not on television. It was on the TV taping. It was just a regular old house show, and it was a packed building, and it was really a great time. And Ed and I became friends, and that's how I got into the promoting end of it.
How did where does the late Mark Bodie come into the picture?
But Mark Bodie comes in
as well.
Right, Mark Bodie comes in later on. Ed and I, like I said, I started working with Ed with Atlantic Wrestling Federation, and then we started with a promotion in Baltimore called Universal Independent Wrestling. And in March of 1992, we actually had our first TV taping, and we actually got a, believe it or not, we actually got a TV slot on one of the major stations in the Baltimore area. Now, granted, it was at Sunday morning at 2 a.m., but we were on television and actually broke records by becoming the first show in that time slot to actually garner ratings points. There were enough people
wow.
watching it, enough people, you know, had registered with the, you know, the ratings company and said they were actually watching UIW wrestling at that time. And this was involved with wrestlers like Axel Rotten and Max Thrasher and
right.
the Golden Phoenix and several guys like that. So we did that for a while, and then we there were some things that went on with UIW that Ed and I didn't like, and so we started another promotion called Wrestling Independent Network, or WIN. And we did that for a couple of years, and again had, you know, great success with that. Our first show for that was in February of I was going to say 93 or 92. I think it was 92. We drew over 2,000 people. Again,
wow.
we had advertising on the local TV stations. We had a main event of the Honky Tonk Man versus Nikolai Volkoff. Tom Brandy was on the card. The Lords of Darkness, Misty Blue Sims, and Linda Dallas were on the card. You know, plus a lot of the great local wrestlers that were here, like Hard Rock Ricky Blues and others. So we did that. We did that for a while, and then Ed and I decided to relocate to Pennsylvania, and this is where we started. Worked with American Commonwealth Wrestling, which was the late Mark Bodie's promotion.
Mm-hmm.
And Ed and I worked with that, and that was another fantastic promotion. We got on local TV in a couple places, and it was the first promotion to actually have a Terry Funk Sabu match.
Oh, yeah.
Car.
Wow.
On a car. This predated anything that ECW had done. So, unfortunately, Mark was tragically killed in an auto accident. And that pretty much ended ACW at that point. And Ed had been working a bit with ECW, and he decided to move on with ECW. And around that time, I had started refereeing. I started refereeing my first match in November of 1993, here in Baltimore. I actually got a call from Axel Rotten saying that they needed someone fast. They had a referee that didn't show up, and they really needed one. And he told me, he goes, "I know you don't have any training or anything, but I know you can do this. You've studied it enough. You've been around it enough that you can do it."
That sounds familiar, doesn't it, Michael? Because that's what you had to do.
Yes, that sounds very familiar to what I had to do, except I didn't make a career out of it. So,
right. So, but I did that. I did refereeing for 15 years. I worked for various local promotions, ACW. I worked with MEWF in Maryland. I did actually referee for ECW one time at one of the TV tapings in Hamburg. That was an interesting experience. It wasn't probably my favorite experience. I'm just not the The extreme style is just not a style that I'm comfortable with. I'm a
right.
more traditionalist. Basically, then in talking through, and I made some friends on the NWA website, and I've been doing some. I did some peripheral work for the NWA. I'd helped draw up some territory maps and things like that for them, and I gotten to know some of the people that were involved in it. And then I found out in January 2001 that Rick O'Brien, who had been running what at the time was NWA New York, was moving with his family to Virginia, and the NWA allowed him to transfer his membership and to take over Virginia as an NWA territory. And I started working for them as in NWA Virginia, which led to me working several shows for different parts of the NWA, and I went to Nashville and refereed several matches at the NWA 57th anniversary show. I went to New York. I went to New Jersey. I went to Charlotte when the NWA broke. Well, when the the TNA NWA deal ended, I went to Charlotte and I got to referee a match in the qualifier for the NWA World Title Tournament.
Which I believe Adam Pearce went on to win that.
Yeah, the match I referee was actually Claudio Castagnoli, who everybody knows is Cesaro now in WWE, versus Brent Albright. And then Brian Danielson was also on the card. He wrestled one of the local guys from Virginia on that card as well.
Mm-hmm. Chad says, you retired from refereeing in 2008. Your last match was, and this had to be a dream for you, a 60-minute time limit draw between Adam Pearce and Damian Wayne for the NWA World Heavyweight title. What was that like?
That was an absolutely incredible match. I mean, if there's two guys that in the business that I love to work with, it's Adam Pearce and Damian Wayne. And I mean, those guys just, and they went at it for the entire 60 minutes. I mean, it was just non-stop, and the crowd was into it, and it came down to, you know, like I said, the time limit ran out, but it was an absolutely awesome match, and you know, I couldn't have picked better ending for my career as a referee.
To be
involved in that match with those two gentlemen, it was absolutely incredible.
Yeah, Damian Wayne's been a long time on the East Coast. Oh yeah, he's relocated to Tennessee. So
yeah, he's moving there in May. Yeah, he's moving there next month. He's wrapping up a couple of commitments he has here in Virginia. He's still currently the AIWF World Heavyweight Champion. Then, like I said, he's been working quite a bit with the Arcadian Wrestling Association in Tennessee. So I think that's part of the reason he's heading out that way.
Very cool. Yeah, I heard lots of good things about Damian. So, yeah, that'll be great for him. Great opportunity. But I'm sure my other co-host would like to ask you some questions.
Sure.
Joe, go ahead.
Well, Jeff, first, great to hear from you, and thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
And indeed, a pleasure. Big kudos to Brian. You know, when you mentioned that you started watching Championship Wrestling, Worldwide Wrestling Federation, Capital Sports, I really enjoyed, you know, being, you know, in my early 50s myself, you know, growing up, literally watching the living with the territories, WWF included.
Mm-hmm.
When you made the decision to become a referee, were there any referees that inspired you? Because in New York, around the time when you were a kid, the ones that come to mind were, you know, a lot of people think of Dick Worley. Dick
mm-hmm.
Roll was one of the main ones, I thought, you know, for the main championship matches. Or, you know, some of the guys, you know, in AWA and NWA, a whole boatload of them. Who were some that were your inspiration or actually that maybe one or two that you emulated? I like this one style. No way, I like this other one style. Or were there any that inspired you?
Well, I would have to say that Tommy Young really inspired me.
Nice.
I watched a lot of his work on the NWA, and I actually got to meet him in Charlotte at the NWA Legends Fan Fest a couple years ago when I did some work at those shows. I always liked his style. I tried to stay neutral as a referee. I mean, I know some, you have your heel referees and things like that that went on. I try to play it down the middle as much as I could, because I always felt it wasn't about me being out there. I was part of the match, but I wasn't the match. And I never tried to take away anything that any of the workers were doing in the ring.
There are some referees that actually try that to make it their show. I don't know if it's deliberate or if it's accidental. One question pertaining to refereeing. Back when you were reffing, would you get the crowd involved? Like, for example, if there was a hair pull or what have you, And you didn't see it, did you? Did you ever look at the crowd? You know, did he pull his hair just to get the crowd all, you know?
Yeah,
sure. He pulled his hair, but there was really nothing you could do because, you know, you didn't see it, but, you know, the crowd pretty much told you. I mean, that's...
I certainly tried to interact with the crowd to try to get them involved in the match because, again, we were there for them. You know, it was for their entertainment. And I certainly, you know, and they seemed to enjoy it. You know, when I would turn around and ask, did he do something? Did they pull hair? Did they? Is he got something in his tights? What's going on? You know, and people would be yelling at me and saying, oh, they got a chain or they're pulling hair or whatever it is that's going on. So, yeah, I definitely tried to get the crowd involved if I could.
Have you ever been roughed up in the ring?
Oh, yes. Actually, my very first match, the first match that I did was like an 8-man tag team match in Baltimore and involved wrestlers from ECW and some of the local wrestlers. My first match, I took a chair shot from Axl Rotten to the head.
Oh, my God.
Oh.
And if anybody's ever been in the ring, and I love Brian to death, and we're so sorry that he's gone now, but he was never light with a chair, I can tell you that much. He when he came at you with a chair, it was full force. So I definitely saw stars when that happened, and I had actually gotten my hand up, and my entire hand was black and blue for weeks. I really thought my hand was broken, but luckily it didn't. And I've gotten knocked around a little bit, nothing too bad. I actually also took a chair shot from King Kong Bundy at one of our shows.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and one of the times I almost got very injured, scared me more than anything, was we had in NWA Virginia, we had a ladder match going, and one of the guys started to climb the ladder, and the ladder actually broke, and a rivet popped off of the ladder and actually hit me in the eye.
Oh, no.
So luckily, no permanent damage was done or anything like that, but that was just one of those... It was just one of those type of things. And, you know, I ain't gotten pushed around or knocked around. But luckily, you know, thankfully I never suffered any serious injuries in the ring. I know that, you know, unfortunately it happens from time to time. But I was never injured badly during my time as a referee.
You know, I must commend you for, you know, your job when you're a referee, because, you know, a lot of people think, well, you know, the referee is like, you know, it's a very important part of the dance, you know, when you have the dance partners, and the referee is the third dance partner. I mean, there's so much stuff in your head, you know, directing traffic, making sure things go the way they're supposed to go, and that type of thing. You know, because let's face it, you know, in this crazy business, there's some cases where some things will go off the rail, if you get my drift.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we've had to deal with, you know, I've had to deal with rings breaking in the middle of a match. We've had rings collapse. I've had, you know, people getting injured with that. You know, another thing too, when we do TV tapings, you know, there's usually a time, you know, the time frame you have to go on. So, you know, it's usually important for the referee to communicate with the timekeeper, especially when you're doing TV tapings, to make sure that the matches fall within the time frame that the promoters and everybody want.
Oh, of course. Being a promoter myself. Oh, I know. I mean, you know, the old saying, timing is of the essence. Well, in this case, it couldn't be more dead on. So,
absolutely.
Michael, do you have a question or two or three or 20?
Well, maybe not 20, but Brian alluded to this. I had my opportunity here just a couple years ago to actually be in the ring and do the referee role at a local show we had here in Humboldt County. A few members of the crew couldn't make it due to traffic issues, so just minutes before the show started, the promoter handed me a shirt, and he goes, oh, you're going to ref? And I was like, well, sure I am. And he goes, no, I'm serious, you're going to ref. And I got in the ring, and the guys walked me through it. I mean, I talked to them a lot, and I learned a lot that night doing that. But I can still remember everything that happened. I mean, it's only been 2 years, but I can still remember everything that happened. I remember being nervous. I'm in that ring that first time. Everybody's watching you. You don't want to mess it up. What was your first experience as a referee? You mentioned the chair shot, but what was going through your mind that first match you did as a referee?
Pretty much, and it was pretty much the same thing I thought every match. Please don't mess this up. please don't get at him. Don't get in anybody's way. Don't do anything stupid. Don't, you know, just try to relax, try to enjoy oneself when doing this. I mean, this was something that I never thought I would ever be doing. I mean, I was always a wrestling fan, and we all have our fantasies of things we would love to do and all this type of stuff. I was living it. I was living the dream. You know, I used to be a young kid sitting in my parents' basement watching wrestling, and I said, wow, it would be really great to do that. Now, obviously, when I grew up, I didn't have the physique, I guess if you want to call it, to be a wrestler. And I wasn't even sure, you know, just being a referee just came across, you know, on a chance. And I tried to make the most of it. And, you always had butterflies because, again, depending where you're with, and you know, sometimes maybe you worked with the same crew of guys for a while, but sometimes you had other people come in, and you always had to be on the lookout, you know, because people do things different ways, and people are used to different, you know, different referees or different wrestlers or different types of promotions. So you gotta, you know, you always have to be conscious of what you're doing.
So what's been? Well, this is a two-part question. One, what's been your favorite match to referee? And second, what's been your most memorable moment, whether it be intentional or unintentional or comical, as a referee?
I think my favorite, if I had one particular match to be a favorite, I had to say it was my last one. I mean, to be in the ring for a full 60 minutes with two guys who were just going at it, I know everybody, quite a few people probably have seen Adam Pearce wrestle. Obviously, he was NWA World Champion for quite a while, and he's now working at the WWE Performance Center. But Damian Wayne's just an old school guy. He's aerial. He does it all. I mean, it was just a fantastic match from start to finish. Some of the favorite moments. There's so many. I did a midget match one time. That was just fun. It was hysterical. It was just a fun match. I think always my favorite times, I think there's a picture of me on my Facebook page of me holding the NWA World Heavyweight title. I mean, that's really something to me. Now, again, like I said, I grew up with that, and once I learned the history of the sport and everything, to sit there and hold that Dome Globe belt in my hands for an actual title match, that really says something to me.
Now, one last question. We're talking the NWA and all that, and currently, you know, the NWA is experiencing kind of a resurgence. Do you follow currently what's happening with the NWA? And just kind of what's your opinion on just the indie wrestling scene in general right now?
Well, I think there's a definite upswing in the indie wrestling scene, not only in the NWA, but the other independent promotions out there. I'm watching also very closely several promotions in the Carolinas right now. One of them's PWX, which is the Pro Wrestling Experience, and the other one is CWF Mid-Atlantic. I'm seeing a lot of good stuff coming out of those guys right now. I mean, I think they're running some very good shows. Some of their stuff is available on YouTube and stuff like that, so I encourage people to check it out. As far as the NWA, I do try to watch it, basically what I can see online. Again, unfortunately, there's really not much of an NWA presence. I'm still living in Maryland right now, so there's not really a presence close by. I think there's some shows running in Northeast Pennsylvania right now for the NWA, but I'm always glad to see that they're doing well. I mean, basically, they are the granddaddy of professional wrestling, at least in this country, if not the world. So I'm always happy to see that. I still see some guys wrestling there that I worked with or that I've known through the years, and I'm really glad that they're still doing well.
I don't know if you heard us mention it earlier in our show, though, but the Parade of Champions event that they had, WrestleMania Week, is going to be available next week on the Fight TV app for $9.99. So, you know, if you're interested and want to kind of catch up and see what that show was like, yeah, that'll be available Wednesday night, a week from today.
Good. I might have to check that out.
Brian, did you have a question?
Oh. Well, I'd say, well, at least one kind of a comment. We've known each other since how long now, Jeff? At least since the 1990s.
Through the NWA message boards and everything like that. That's how we first started corresponding with each other.
And of course, just finding out, you know, title history information. Of course, we know some other dear friends, Earl Oliver, Redneck Town.
Yes.
Hisaharu Tanabe out of New York. He runs the Pure Resu Dojo website.
Right.
So, yes. And at least I'll try to email him some late title changes. Like I say, but I never thought, Jeff, I'd be in it this deep as a pro wrestling fan. Like, I really, really wanted, I think I was so desperate to try to get into pro wrestling, just working for an actual company, and I'm going, thank God that never happened, because now at least I'm the internet and this podcast we're doing now. I never thought that would happen, plus CAC.
Right.
So, yeah, just a lot has happened since then.
Yeah.
I'm really
glad for your shows, you know, we have a show that's running out of Baltimore here by Hard Rock Ricky Blues called Pioneers of the Independent Networks. And we've talked a lot about the past, you know, and it's amazing that the things that we can do now with the internet that we couldn't do then. All our information came from either magazines. You mentioned, I heard you talking about Bill Apter before, obviously through the, what was known as the Apter mags. And of course, a lot of
the
sheets.
Newsletters.
Yep, all the newsletters that used to be out. I mean, there used to be a lot more of those at the time. But again, because we didn't have the internet. And another thing we had talked about, like tape trading, and I know you probably did some of that as well. You know, again, because we didn't have the instantaneous information that we do now. You know, so that it's. I'm glad to see that part of it has really evolved to the point where we have, you know, fantastic shows like yours and Pin and the other ones that are out there that, you know, people that, you know, can get this information and find out about wrestling that may be around the corner from them they don't realize, or maybe even going on, you know, again over in Japan or Europe or wherever, or Canada, wherever it is that's happening, and find out what's happening and be aware of what's going on.
Yeah. And to just have you guys kind of there with me through some of my triumphs, winning first place on a speech on pro wrestling, novice forward speaking, like right about before my 22nd birthday in Longview, Washington, and then the big one, the CAC Red Bastion Friendship Award on Roddy Piper's birthday.
Right.
So I'll never forget that. And then this most recent deal, I got a certificate of appreciation in our dressing room in IHWA California in Eureka right before we did our event. And it was the 15th anniversary of the last WCW Monday Nitro.
Wow.
Which, you know, that was pretty much the end of an era, because I was really more WCW fan than I was WWF, because I was, like you, like attracted to some of the more in-ring work and you know, a lot less flashy, a lot less showmanship. And when that just went away, it was like all those memories just started flooding back.
Right,
and
exactly.
Tape trading, and, you know, thank you, Hisaharu, for that. That's how I got my Bruiser Brody videotape compilation of his All Japan matches.
Right.
And then getting to meet Barbara Goodish at CAC in person.
Right. Oh,
so
that must have been absolutely awesome to actually meet her and talk to her. That should be great.
Oh yeah, yeah. So yeah. It's just been great just to kind of seeing this dream become a reality, and it became a lot more than just pictures and autographs. It really became about relationships and networking, and so these are probably some of the closest friends you've had. I mean, I know you're married.
Definitely.
You've got some kids and.
Right.
Well, at least life is going well for you there out of Baltimore.
Oh, yes. So, yeah, and we still get together. We've gotten together recently. I've gotten together with some of the guys that I work with. We had celebrated the 25th anniversary of the first UIW TV taping a couple months ago. And then, of course, unfortunately, we've had some downtimes here in the area as we've lost two wrestlers that were, you know, from the area that were very well respected in the business. One of them being Don DeHavilland, who was known as Hack Myers.
Oh yeah.
And and of course Axel Rotten. So it's been a little rough, but you know, we actually got together and talked about some good times that we had and that sort of thing. So, you know, I do still try and keep in touch with a lot of the folks that I, you know, I've worked with in the business for the last almost 30 years now that I've been, you know, that I had first gotten involved in it. So, it's definitely things you don't forget.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever get a chance to go to the NACAC reunions when they were out there? Because I know they did East Coast reunions as well as West Coast.
No, unfortunately, I have not, and shame on me for not doing that. But you know, that's one of my goals someday too, is maybe to get out there to one of the CACs and really you know, meet with some of those. I always see your photos and everything, and I always marvel at some of the great legends that in our business that attend those. And most recently, I know I love the belt that Jim Ross got at the last one. That's a fabulous trophy that he most definitely earned by him as one of the greatest announcers, I think, that's been in the business, you know, right up there with the Gordon Solis and the Lance Russells and the other guys like that.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. At least up in your end, and like I say, I'm a little envious because at least you've got, in Charlotte, you've got the NWA Legends Fan Fest, or now it's just Mid-Atlantic Wrestling Legends Fan Fest. So that's a pretty good deal there. And, of course, well, at least the Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame, yeah, I'm kind of glad it moved to Wichita Falls, Texas. So, yeah, I'm definitely planning, definitely, if not this year, sometime next year, I definitely want to plan to make a visit out to Texas and actually see that myself, get knock one of my bucket list items off.
Yeah, I think they're having the class of 2016 is going to be inducted very shortly. As a matter of fact, one of my friends and certainly a legend in the business, Lalani Kai, is due for induction this year. Well-deserved for her.
Oh, yeah, well-deserved. Yeah, great gal. And, of course, yeah, we've got that other main wrestling Hall of Fame out of Iowa, which has a professional wrestling section there. And so we've had some pretty good inductions. So that's coming up in July. So, yeah, I mean, as far as New York, it would take a real miracle because besides meeting seeing Hisaharu and some other friends of mine, one is a pro wrestler, has a family in Long Island. Bobby Rydell lives there too, and we've interviewed him, and I got to meet him in person at CSC in 2012. And then Bambi Weevil, well, North Carolina, New York, but she also came to CSC, so it was good to see her again. But that would be the only box office draws for me to go to New York someday.
Right.
So just to see those people. Like I say, anymore now, it's all about the people.
Sure, absolutely.
But anyway, do you have anything you wish to give a public shout out as far as are any projects you're involved in before we?
Not anything I'm doing personally. Except I have done a couple episodes of the Pioneers of the Independent Networks, which is available on Facebook. That's really fun, and that talks a lot about the early days of independent wrestling, especially here in the Mid-Atlantic area. I encourage everyone to check that out. And the only other thing I wanted to end with one is I want to speak a little bit to the young people who are starting out in this business. Please do your research. If you want to get involved in the business, check it out. Talk to people like myself, like yourselves, who've been around in the business for a while. You know, find out what's going on. Try to get a good idea of what it's going to take to be involved in the professional wrestling business. Don't think you're going to go out there and be the next Hulk Hogan right away. It doesn't work like that. You know, you're not going to make $1 million right away. But, you know, find out, do some research. You know, I definitely encourage if you're interested in the business, get into it. There's a lot of places you can go. There's a lot of promotions out there you can work for to start building your career up and then be ready, you know, hopefully that you get that call to the big time.
Definitely. Well, given advice, it was great having you on our program. Yeah, we definitely want you again, for sure, anytime.
Absolutely.
Whenever get a free chance. So we definitely want to wish you the best. Stay in touch. Hope you have a good night.
Thank you. I hope you guys all have a great night as well.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for being on the show, Jeff.
Not a problem. Yeah, you too.
Brian, that was good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, real good talking with him. Yeah, we've known each other since the 1990s. Yeah, if I ever get a chance to go out his way to Baltimore area, yeah, I would definitely want to look him up for sure. Yeah, great guy, lots of wisdom, lots of really good stories. Yeah, Baltimore has great history with pro wrestling over the years, through the territories, through the WWF-WCW wars and NWA wars, and now the independent scene. So, yeah, lots of great history there. I definitely recommend Pioneers of Independent Wrestling, too, to check out.
Yeah, well, who knows? Maybe he'll make his way out to Cauliflower Alley next year.
Yeah,
May 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. Not April next year,
yep.
Folks. Yeah, it's
yeah,
gonna
not
be
an April Fool's joke either.
No rib at all. No rib at all. And,
no rib at all. It's May.
Yeah.
Also, we got one sad announcement here. I just saw this on Facebook a few moments ago. Well, I was expecting this. First, we had Vance Nevada retiring, and then Michelle Starr. And now, Disco Fury has announced his retirement. April 28th in Maple Ridge, British Columbia is where he got his start. But, yeah, he's thanking his parents, his siblings, thanking Mark Velios, Michelle Starr, and his trainer. And without him, I would have never stood a chance. Without him, I would have been able to defend the NWA Canadian Junior Heavyweight Championship in four different countries. He is not just my teacher. He is my friend. His family, my own family, have grown virtually into one. I want to thank his wife, Stacy, who put up with every drama-filled encounter with egotistically filled moments inside and outside of the ring. She has seen everything in wrestling, what this business is about. I love her more and more because she's been my rock to keep me motivated. His kids, who have been on road trips and met so many odd characters in the world of wrestling. Trust is earned, and if my kids liked you, then you were one of the good ones. Finally, thank you to each and every fan who spent their hard-earned money to watch Disco win or lose. I believe the fans in the Lower Mainland are some of the loyalest wrestling fans on the planet. Thank you. So, thank you, Disco Fury. I was wondering when this was going to happen. Well, now I know. So, congratulations on your retirement. And we will miss you very, very much.
Disco was good. Saw footage of him. Always kept up, you know, with his results from Mike Rogers when he ran the Ring Around the Northwest newsletter for eons. It felt like it. Such a good guy, Mike Rogers is. You know, wish him and his family well.
Yeah.
And got to meet Disco a few years back at Cauliflower Alley. It was really cool. Went up to him and said, "Hey, I know you." And he saw my name tag. He goes, "Hey, I know you too." And so, you know, him, myself, and Michelle Starr, we, you know, talked and swapped, you know, old road stories, war stories, ribs, that type of thing. And, you know, our best goes out to him. Very illustrious career.
Yeah. Yeah, first met him in 2005, and I kept track of him for years and years since the 1990s. Had great matches with the late Adam Firestorm, El Torch, and Tony Cozina. They were just trading belts back and forth. Just great, great matches. And I think there's even a nice article on the Slam, a Canadian pro wrestling website, about Disco Fury when he got injured one time. And I think they did a show for him to raise money for his funds. You know, typical thing that we do for pro wrestling, help one of our own and for other worthy causes. So, he'll definitely be missed for sure. I guess we could go ahead and let the cat out of the bag too. And now he did have one injury a while back, so he had to kind of play a different role, Panama Wasp. So, which is a little different for him, but yeah, still Disco Fury, and he used a Disco Train. A different version of it might be the song from Led Zeppelin, but anyway, or Ozzy Osbourne, but He will definitely be missed in the ring. Yeah, look at, and hopefully he will show up at CAC again, at least this time in the retired category.
Yeah, it'd be really cool to, you know, sit him down and just, you know, just talk with him and, you know, pick his brain. I mean, guy's been in the business for such a long, long, long time. And which reminds me, Brian, when you were a kid, who was your all? This just came off left field. Work with me here. As a kid, who was your all-time favorite wrestler, regardless if it was on a national level or local level, or, you know, like Pacific Northwest level or that type of thing?
I know probably the one that turned me on a lot was Barry Windham. Really liked his work as the Widowmaker in the WWF at that time. And then finding out through George Napolitano and Bill After about his NWA stuff, and finally through tape trading, getting videotapes of all this match exclusive, the classic encounters he had with Ric Flair, seeing him finally win the NWA World Heavyweight Championship a bit late, and then kind of forced to see him retire for a little bit and then come back and then retire, and now just mainly retired. So, yeah, he's always been one of my favorites.
Oh, nice, nice. Yeah, my favorites, oh, my God. Well, I guess it kind of depends on what era or what territory. Living here, you know, within the realm of the Shire's territory, San Francisco, my all-time favorite had to have been Ray Stevens. You see, when I caught Ray, yeah, he already did the baby face, the good guy thing. So he was a good guy. I always knew that he was known as the man that invented breaking the rules. I went, oh, man, he was a bad guy at one time? Well, little did I know, oh, yeah, he was bad, all right. He was just downright evil. But, you know, I loved him. And, you know, moving up to Medford, you know, got turned on to the Don Owens territory. And, you know, living about 2 minutes away from the old Medford National Guard Armory, every other Wednesday night, we were at the Armory watching Don Owens Portland Wrestling. And my all-time favorite there was Dutch Savage. He was just, he was it for me. I mean, guy was just ruggedly handsome, just a brute. I mean, and he was one of those kick-butt good guys, kind of like Austin, kind of like Steve Austin, if you will. And also getting the honor to meet Dutch on a few occasions, one at a TV taping up in Vancouver, Washington for Sandy Barr's Championship Wrestling USA. You know, got to meet Dutch there, and also, you know, got to see him in person in Medford, you know, as a kid. But a few years ago at Dean Silverstone's final wrestling reunion in Issaquah, Arlene and myself, we were personally invited to go up there, and that, I will never forget. That was such, it was very, very emotional. I was like, wow, because this is one of those things where it's not a fan fest. You know, you go. Dean opens up his house on the lake for the boys to come on out and just enjoy themselves. You know, be yourself, swap stories, let all hang out. And, you know, we went. And hanging out with Dutch Savage was cool. Talked to him, and it's really cool meeting all these people that you can not only call colleague, but you can call friend as well. The next day, before we all went back home, we went to the IHOP restaurant that was a little bit a ways from Dean's house, and it was Arlene, myself, and the Kellys, Bob Kelly and wife Chris, and it was, you know, and Arlene really became good friends with Chris. I mean, they talked all the time whenever they just saw each other at CAC, or in this case at Dean's house, whether that or talking to Mrs. Al Mandel. Arlene, you know, became good friends with her. But it's funny because at the restaurant, you know, Bob, myself, we were sitting there looking at each other, smiling, and while Arlene and Chris were carrying on talking, they were talking about ailments. Basically, you know, like, you know, the arthritis, why do you got this gimmick on your wrist, that type of thing. And we're just kind of sitting there, like, on the outside looking in, listening to Arlene, and Chris, just they were just, and then they looked at us as like, boys, don't you have a story? And so we ended up joining in, talking about our ailments and what have you. But it's a very, very fond memory. And speaking for Arlene, you know, myself, we missed the Kellys very much. You know, they were such, you know, dear, dear friends. And meeting them in 2006 at CAC, you know, when, you know, so Bob, what do you do? So what have you done in this business? And he gave us a lesson on territorial wrestling, especially Gulf Coast wrestling, where he excelled. And we got religion, got gospel.
Wow. That's a good story.
Go ahead, Brent.
What was it like going to a Dean's reunion, Northwest reunion? What was that like for you?
It was, I've always made the comment, you know, oh, it's, you know, heaven on earth. It's going to wrestling heaven. Well, I mean, CAC, it's going because, you know, you get to meet all these people that you grew up watching, and especially your first time, it's like, wow. And if you're in the business, you just got to kind of, for a split second, kind of be careful. Okay, not to mark out here. But I knew about Dean's reunions because of the pictures that would be posted in the Ring Around the Northwest newsletter. And I'm thinking, God, this is cool. And so, you know, every month or every other month, I would talk to Mike Rogers on the phone. And I'd pick his brain about that, and he goes, it's just awesome. I mean, everybody is just laid back. No one is, the guard is no longer up. The guard is down, if that makes any sense. And, you know, I talked to Dean a couple of times. Like, hey, you know, I'd like to come. And he goes, well, you know, I know you're in the business somewhat, but, you know, strictly it's by invite only and what have you. And I go, you know, I understand. And, you know, that was the only time I asked, which was many, 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 many years ago. And, you know, I would see him at CAC, and, you know, we'd talk and that type of thing. And Sean Main would, you know, hey, Joe, do me a favor. Go give Dean a kiss and tell him it's from me. And so I give him a kiss, and the look on his face looked like he pooped his pants. And I go, Dean, this is from Sean. And Sean goes, oh, you know, and Dean would say, oh, that's Sean. I'm going to get him. And, you know, the years go by, and finally I get this letter in the mail, and it's from Dean. I'm thinking, wait a minute, my dues for CAC, we're caught up here. And so I opened it up, and I still have this letter somewhere in the bedroom. You know, you and your wife Arlene are invited to come to the reunion. And I teared up. I went, wow. And Arlene knew what this was all about because, you know, she reads the newsletters from Mike Rogers as well. And we went, packed our bags. We went. We checked in at the motel and drove over, and beautiful house. It's on the lake. And mm-hmm. the first people you see is you see the Destroyer. You see Don Manoukian. You see Ed Moretti, Pepper Martin, Dutch Savage, Ed Wiskowski. Yes, Dutch Savage and Ed Wiskowski in the same vicinity. Imagine that. I guess there was a little, they had issues or what have you, but, you know, at Dean's house, everybody was there, and there was no heat, there was no nothing, it was cool. You know, we, you know, shook hands with everybody, and said, hey, great to see you, and it was cool. It was down to earth. I brought some stuff for the boys. I brought a DVD for Pepper Martin, brought one for Dutch Savage. Fritz von Goring was there, and I have footage of him from the Cow Palace. So, you know, put together some stuff for him, and could not thank Dean enough for the invite. And Arlene, she introduced me to, because me being a type 2 diabetic, I drink Coke Zero, but she turned me on to Vanilla Coke Zero, which I guess is the official drink of Ed and Dale and Dean and Ruth at the time. So it was funny, you know, we all sat and just talked, and I guess Dean made he made an arrangement with the neighbor, which owns one of those Mexican taco wagon truck thingies, and they were parked right. They were parked in front for us to go get food. And you know, And then you hear people say, hey, come and get it. Nobody moved. So, you know, my darling wife, Arlene, she morphs into Mrs. Joe. And so she goes there, and then she comes back holding a big burrito. And it's kind of funny. Don Leo Johnson says, hey, Arlene, what's that? Dean and Ed, and it, lunch is ready. It's right there. Well, you know, when you tell a house full of wrestlers lunch is ready, you know what happens next. Stampede. And so everybody hauled tail to the taco wagon and got their grub on, and it was really, really cool. And watching Arlene sit with Mrs. Al Mandel on the dock over the lake there, it was really, really cool watching them talk. They really connected. Seeing Bob and Chris, you know, she got together with Chris, and it was, you know, it was just so awesome. And then later in the day, you know, we sat, and Dick Beyer, you know, asked Arlene, you know, and Pepper Marr was there too, and Dick goes, asked Arlene, so Arlene, when was the last time you worked? Well, Arlene proceeds to say, well, you know, I got off work yesterday at 5 o'clock, and I looked at Arlene, and I go, I think what Dick's asking is, when was the last time you worked as Mrs. Joe? And we all got to laugh out of that, and she goes, well, the last time I worked was the last time my husband worked. Oh? And we explained what happened. The last time she worked was the last time we worked for a promotion called the West Coast Wrestling Connection, which for reasons... And not maybe another time, maybe another place, but we were no longer working there, and the gist of the conversation got to be, you know, pretty funny, pretty hilarious, but just to protect the guilty, you know, I'll kind of, you know, slow down on that one. But I mean, it's so cool, everybody just talking, reminiscing, me sitting in the den with Dutch Savage and Don Leo Jonathan, just the three of us. And I'm sitting on the floor, and they're just talking and reminiscing, and, hey, kid, aren't you going to come sit down on the couch? And I went, no, hey, I'm good. Just I'm part of the furniture. Pretend I'm a booger again, under the table. And they started laughing, and they talked, and I took a couple of pictures, which I sent one to Mitzi, Dutch's daughter, and it's been on Facebook a time or two, but I do have, and I think you may have seen it, Brian, the group picture of everybody.
Oh, yeah.
And it really meant a lot. I mean, all those people, very, very dear to me, and it was cool. And I just cannot thank Dean enough to this day. It's just awesome. All the friendships. I mean, you yourself, Brian. I mean, you know, we all have acquaintances, which, you know, you see every so often, but then the friendships that you make, and it doesn't mean that you have to talk to them every day or once a week or whatever. I mean, in my case, Dwayne Johnson, you know, he's a friend, and every time we talk, it's a continuation from the previous conversation. You know, there was a time where I didn't talk to him in about 2 or 3 years, and then, you know, I would talk to him, and it would be the carryover from the previous conversation. Even if it's for a few seconds, it's like, hey, I'll keep in touch. It doesn't matter when or where, but it'll happen again. And in this business, my friend, you know, people can't take that away from you.
Right.
I hope that gives you an idea about the Issaquah reunion. It was cool, and I'm also honored to be named in Dean's book, because there's a chapter about the reunion. So I was like, you know, I didn't know this until Mike mentioned it. I went, what? And so I took a look, and like I said, I hope that one of these times, you know, Dean will open up the house again. I mean, I know it's going to be a little bit of time because he's going through a very rough time,
yeah.
and our huge thoughts and prayers, you know, go to Dean and, you know, our love as well.
And also a little shout out to Mick Karch, lost his beloved dog Soupy recently.
Oh no!
And he was, yeah, they, I don't know, had him for a long, long time. Made that announcement. It's like, oh no! Well, I kind of knew things were kind of starting to go downhill, but I didn't think it'd be this soon. So yeah. So thoughts and prayers out to him for sure.
Oh my god, yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, it's family. I mean, it's, yeah, oh my man, that's very, very sad. Very, very sad. Well, Brian, now what do you want to do?
Michael, are you there?
No, Mike had to step away for. Mike,
I'm right here. I'm back.
Oh,
I'm back.
Good. Oh, good.
I just been listening to Joe kind of telling some stories, and I didn't want to interrupt you guys, so I do apologize for having to step out there for a few minutes. But
oh wait, speaking of story, guys, I got to tell you this awesome story.
Uh-oh.
A huge shout out to this iconic restaurant, Brian. One of these days, you ought to go. If you are in northern Mendocino County, and if you're going through the little town of Laytonville, you need to check out the Big Chief Drive-In. It is awesome. It has a laundromat. Mike, tell them. Put them over.
Cool.
You're horrible, Joe. You are downright horrible. And that would be the Big Chief Drive-In and laundromat. Yes, yes. That is another story for another day.
One.
Thank you very much. Yeah, that one, Brian, yes. I know we have regaled you with this story before.
You know, for kicks and giggles, I've got a picture of myself standing next to the sign. Arlene, under duress, took the picture, and I sent it to Mike personally. So I think it'll have to rear its ugly head again on Facebook just to get the fall effect on that one.
Well, guys, I hope the interview with Jeff Capo went well. Like I said, I'm sorry I had to step out there for a few minutes, but sometimes things come up. Brian, I did want to let you know, though, I talked to Franklin Lee the other day. Franklin Lee will be a guest on our show next week, May 4th. He's going to come on. He's going to tell his story. We're going to talk about the Franklin Lee Hall of Fame. And it has to be multiple choice questions. That's what he asked for. But he has accepted the challenge, so Joe and I are going to put it together. And you will go one-on-one with Franklin Lee in the very first ever IWE Radio Professional Wrestling Trivia Contest.
Wow, multiple choice.
Yes, he has for multiple choice, though.
Okay, I don't think there's going to be a prize. I think it's just going to be kind of like on the Jim Rome show. Once a year they have the Smack Off where you get to be King of Smack. Well, you'll get to be King of Trivia.
There you go. Yes, it'll mainly be bragging rights and all that. But, yes, Franklin Lee will be a guest on our show next week. Also, May 11th. We're going to be joined by Rock Riddle. He's going to be joining us, as well as some of the names that are in the movie Church. Their Kickstarter campaign just started here last week. Rock got in contact with us. He will be on here with some of the names from that movie to talk about the Kickstarter campaign, how the funding is going, what the movie itself is about. If you are at CAC and saw the Southern Wrestling Hall of Fame ceremony, you do realize that half of his speech was talking about this upcoming movie in a way that only the original Mr. Wonderful Rock Riddle can do. So he will be joining us in a couple weeks. Yes.
Now, Mike, if I may, I think I may have to correct you on this. It's not Rock Riddle joining us. We're going to be joining Rock Riddle.
Yeah.
Rock Riddle will be in the studio. Let's just go that route, and then we'll just let it go from there. He may take over and interview everybody. We might just sit and listen.
Like I said.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, those are the upcoming shows the next couple weeks. We are still working on, we're going to be joined event here soon by Cowboy Johnny Mantell. He's going to come on and talk about the Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame. I'm hoping to get him before the induction. I do have a guest in the studio with me in case you haven't figured it out. I'm hoping Johnny will come on soon to talk about the Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame, talk about the inductions. So he'll be joining as well. We also are in the midst. We are talking with numerous other names, some WWE developmental, some TNA developmental names that will be joining our show here in the next couple months. So that is still in the works. So we definitely got some big things planned for IWE Radio, as well as I've talked with Joe about this. I think it's about time, guys, we need to do another tribute show. Our tribute shows always seem to be some of the better ones. Those are the ones that people always seem to remember, and those have been some of our best downloaded episodes. So I think it's time to start looking around and find a fitting
man or woman to do a tribute show for. So we are looking into that. That's going to be coming up soon, as well as whatever else Joe and Brian and I can come up with for you as far as entertainment value goes on this podcast.
Very cool. Very cool.
But guys, on that note, I think we're going to wrap up the show tonight. Like I said, we will be joined next week by Franklin Lee. So until then, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/encyclopediaworldclass. You can find me on Twitter at MichaelMC1972 or on Instagram at McCurdy1972. Joe, you're still not on Twitter. I tried to get that hashtag trending in 2016, but it just hasn't hit yet. But until then, where can they find you?
Well, I'm not going to worry too much about that. Just basically, y'all can find me on Facebook. Just go to Facebook. Just find me. That's Joe Sousa, J-O-E-S-O-U-S-A. There's two pictures. There's either me greeting people, fans at Rumble in the Redwoods last year's. No, the year before, but still. It's still in my gear, my tuxedo, if you will. And the other one is surrounded by my three beautiful kids, Patty, Michael, and Jessica. Brian, where can they find you?
And you can find yours truly, Brian, B-R-I-A-N, Westcott, W-E-S-T-C-O-T-T, .33 on Facebook, and my pro wrestling website, www.brianrich.net/wrestle.html.
And as always, you can find all three of us on Facebook or my lovely daughter here, facebook.com/IHWE Radio. Or on Twitter at IHWE Radio. You can find us every week on the Offshoots Network. Our show goes up every Thursday. And also IHWE Retro Radio every week that Nigel Rabid does not have a show. So, Nigel, if you want to take a break for a couple weeks, you know, we could fill in and, you know, share some classic interviews. Or you can just tune into us every Wednesday night right here on IHWE Professional Wrestling Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, this weekend WWE presents Payback. They're referring to it as the first pay-per-view of the new era. Will Vince McMahon make the announcement who's going to run Raw, Shane, or will it be Stephanie and Triple H? Do you care? Well, if you do, watch Payback on Sunday, May 1st. Roman Reigns versus AJ Styles, Sami Zayn versus Kevin Owens, Chris Jericho versus Dean Ambrose. Damn it, Joe, they put on a wrestling card this time. Let's hope they don't screw it up. If they do, we'll be back here to talk about it next week, right here on IHWE Radio. Thank you for joining us, and have a wonderful
hold on,
yes.
Hold on, before you close, we got a plug next week. Parade of Champions, a little under $10, $9.99. Go to the Fight app.
That's right.
And,
thank you, Joe. Parade of Champions goes live 8 p.m. Eastern.
And through the shattered glass at hotmail.com, right?
Yes, through the shattered glass at hotmail.com. I will send you that email address. You can order Jeannie Clark's book. Goes live on Amazon May 4th, or you can go to that email and order your own personally autographed copy. Parade of Champions on Fight TV goes live 8 p.m. Eastern next Wednesday, May 4th. And, of course, at 6 p.m. Pacific, you can join us here on IHWE Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, have a wonderful evening.
So long, everybody.
Good night, everyone.